He offered a small smile. Sorry, house rules. I set my pack down longingly on the table. You picked a tough city to live in if you don't like cigarette smoke. And yet, somehow I manage. He rubbed his hands on his thighs impatiently. You don't need to call your people. They might want to know you're okay. In fact, I would prefer they know you're okay. I'm sort of half expecting a SWAT team to bust down my door any minute now for kidnapping you. I guess. The very last thing I wanted to do was call my people, but Jonah was watching me. Just get it over with. Can I use your phone? Jonah handed over his cell, and I started to punch in Jimmy's number. I was 99% sure whatever catastrophe had happened at the Pony Club was my fault. And 100% sure I didn't want to know how bad the scene really was. I chickened out and called Lola instead. She answered on the third ring.
Yeah,
she said, her voice full of sleep. Lola, it's me.
Casey?
She yawned. Where are you? Are you calling from in the house? No, I said. I'm not there.
Well, that narrows it down, Lola said, sighing. Jesus, Case, do I need to send a search party?
On second thought, you'd better lay low where Jimmy can't find you. He was pissed last night.
Jeannie, too. Then again, she's always pissed.
I closed my eyes at the accusation and braced myself. Why is he pissed?
You don't remember, do you?
You fucking drank yourself into a Jägermeister coma right after inviting half the audience into the green room. But instead of sticking around to deal with your mess, Hugo saved you.
He put you in the limo, right?
Yeah, we had to cab it home. Jimmy was not happy about that. I twisted a lock of hair around my finger. That's why he was pissed? Because he had to take a cab? Case, you think he was worried about you? Hun, he figured you were fucking the limo driver. A pause. I could hear the unspoken words. We all did. Another ugly flush of red colored my neck. I steadfastly refused to look at Jonah. Well, I didn't. I was in a Jägermeister coma, remember? You can tell him that.
Whatever. Does it matter? Jimmy called the company and gave them an earful for not picking us up. That limo driver is going to be up to his ass in hot water. Hugo, too.
No, no, he didn't do anything wrong. I shifted on the couch away from Jonah and lowered my voice. My headache ratcheted up 10 notches. Neither of them did. Tell Jimmy it wasn't Hugo's fault. I'm all right. I heard Lola light a cigarette. I found my fingers inching toward my own pack and had to sit on my hand.
You realize you totally trashed the place, right?
Lola asked on an exhale of smoke.
According to Jimmy, the Pony Club is talking potential lawsuit to pay the damages.
I nearly dropped Jonah's phone. Did anyone get hurt? I asked in a small voice.
No, she said, the anger deflating from her voice. But the green room is trashed. Beyond trashed. It looked like a war zone when we left.
So, what's happening now? Is tonight's show canceled? Lola snorted.
Hell no, not with 60 grand worth of ticket sales on the line.
Oh.
I'll tell Jimmy you're okay, but maybe, I don't know, Case, you might want to lay low for a couple of hours. At least until Jimmy gets over his own hangover. I mean, to be fair, everyone was pretty wasted last night.
Now I could hear a small smile on my friend's lips.
It was an epic show. Epic.
Was it?
Oh, girl, you don't even know. We're on the verge of megastardom and you're missing it. No, you're almost wrecking it.
But I didn't, right?
Nope. The show must go on.
Lola sighed again. Get some rest. Sober up for tonight's show.
You're still good to go, right?
She asked.
and I could hear the warning tone in her voice. This wasn't just my big break, but hers, too.
Sure, I said weakly. Thanks, Lola. And tell Jimmy...
That you're sorry? Yeah. Time for some new material, Case. Talk to you later.
I handed the phone back to Jonah. Thanks.
Are the cops going to be busting in the door any minute now? He asked darkly. Or am I going to lose my job? Or both?
No. Well, maybe. Jonah's eyes widened.
Maybe which?
Shame and humiliation flushed my skin red. The second one. Listen, I'll talk to your boss at the limo place. I started as Jonah bolted out of his chair with a curse. He ignored me and began jabbing at his phone.
Harry, it's me, Jonah,
He shot me a glare as he listened to whatever was being said on the other end. I held my aching head in my hands as Jonah tried to explain the situation. Finally, a cell phone appeared in my line of sight.
Would you mind telling my boss why I couldn't finish the job last night?
Jonah asked tightly. Yeah, sure. I took the phone. Hi, Harry, is it? I'm Casey. From Rapid Confession, I had a bad night, and Jonah was nice enough to let me crash on his couch. Nothing happened, I added, prompting a strange look from Jonah. He wanted to go back to pick up the rest of my band, but I wasn't doing so hot. He took care of me, okay? Harry promised not to fire Jonah and barked that he wanted the limo back ASAP. Then he hung up. Jonah glared at me.
Well?
You're not fired, but Harry wants the limo back. Like, now. He nodded.
Okay, fine. Let's go. I'll take you back to your band's house on the way.
I plucked at a stray thread on the afghan.
What?
Jonah snapped.
You heard my boss. I gotta return the damn car.
He cocked his head at me.
Don't you need to get back?
No, I thought. I really don't. I just wasn't up to facing it.
None of it.
Not yet. I offered Jonah a weak smile. The aspirin hasn't made a dent in this headache. Would it be okay with you if I took a nap while you take the limo back? I'll call a cab later and be out of your hair, I promise. Jonah's dark eyes widened.
You want me to leave you alone in my home while I return the limo? A limo you puked in, by the way, so you can take a nap?
I promise I'll just nap and go, I said, then felt my stomach drop. Wait, I puked in your limo? Jonah looked like he had a smart-ass retort ready to go, but he must have felt sorry for me because he said in a gentler tone,
Don't you have a show tonight?
I have some time before I have to be back. Jonah rubbed his chin, looking torn.
After I returned the limo, I was planning on going to work. My other work, he added. I have a tight schedule, a really tight schedule, and I need to keep to it.
I'm sorry, I don't want to interfere. I looked up at him and offered a smile. What do you do for your other work? Jonah waved a hand at the glass on the coffee table. You're a collector?
No, I make these.
My eyes widened as I looked at the glass art with new eyes. There were two sphere-shaped paperweights. One that looked like it was filled with sea life from a coral reef, and the other holding an incredibly intricate swirl of color. Beside the paperweights was a bottle striped with gold dust, soaked in ribbons of red. I picked up the paperweight with the sea life in it. Anemones with white and yellow tentacles, ruffled ribbons of color, and, somehow, the speckled colorations of tropical fish. A piece of the ocean in my hand, I murmured. I glanced up at him. You made this?
Yeah, it's what I do. I'm not a limo driver, that's my night job. By day, I'm an industrial artist. Lighting, metal, glass. Mostly glass.
You're really good, I said. More than good. This is astonishing.
Yeah, thanks.
He rubbed the back of his neck, watching me hold the glass. He probably thinks I'm going to break it. I carefully set the paperweight back down.
So I gotta get to the hot shop, Jonah said. That's where I make them, the glass. I'll be there until about 2 this afternoon.
He pressed his lips together, thinking. Finally, he said,
I guess you're welcome to stay here until then.
Really? You don't mind?
I don't know if I'd go that far, Jonah said with a dry smile. There's some food here in the fridge, if or when you're up to eating. Help yourself to the bottled water, too. If you really need to smoke, there's a little courtyard in the middle of the complex. You'll see the sidewalk just to the right as you go out. It has benches and an ashtray.
Okay, sure. Got it, I said, relief flooding me that I had a few hours before I had to face the music, so to speak. At the kitchen counter, Jonah scribbled something on a piece of paper and brought it back to me.
This is my cell number. If you need anything, just call. Phone's in the kitchen.
I took the paper and met his gaze. Up close, his eyes were warmer, a deep, rich brown. Thanks a ton for letting me crash, I said. I really appreciate it. Not many people would let a total stranger hang out in their place, unsupervised. Jonah smiled tightly.
Tell me about it.
He pocketed his keys and went out, locking the door behind him. He left me alone in his place. Me, the girl who wrecked the pony club just hours before, puked in his car, invaded his space, and almost cost him his job. He was being so cool about it, more than cool. He trusts me, sort of.
Not that I deserved trust.
I winced at the thought of what the green room was going to look like tonight. Having to go and do another show filled me with a strange kind of dread. What is wrong with me? I figured I could get into less trouble if I slept, and I wasn't lying to Jonah about needing a nap anyway. My headache thundered, and I wanted to sleep for a million years. I lay down against the couch cushion and pulled the old afghan over my shoulders. It wasn't as ugly as I thought at first. Its weight was comforting, like a good hug. My heavy gaze fell over the beautiful array of blown glass on the coffee table. Gorgeous swirls of color and design, trapped and floating in the center of the paperweights, wrapped like ribbons along the body of the bottle. Beautiful, I murmured. My scattering thoughts imagined it would be peaceful and quiet inside one of those paperweights. I could float, weightless in a glass ocean, suspended in beauty, surrounded by color and stillness. No noise, no pounding drums or tearing riffs or screaming fans. Just silence and safety. I was asleep within moments. Chapter 6. Casey. I woke up, unable to remember where I was until my gaze found the glass paperweights. My limo driver's apartment. Jonah Fletcher. Fletch, like the Chevy Chase movie. I smiled to myself and stretched. The light streaming in from the window was sharp and white, the kind that arrived with high noon. The DVR clock said it was 1. I'd slept for 6 straight hours. My stomach was no longer queasy, but clamoring for food. I wanted a cigarette more. I took my pack and headed outside, toward the courtyard Jonah told me about. The heat smacked me upside the head, and my headache threatened to return. I didn't know how anyone could get used to desert heat. Born and raised in San Diego, where it was almost always 74 degrees and breezy, I couldn't tolerate this kind of stark, dry heat for longer than a day or two. It was like living in an oven. Though I sort of loathed the idea of rejoining the band, I was glad we were leaving Nevada on Tuesday. I sat on one of the wrought iron benches in the dinky courtyard, shaded by one half of the L-shaped apartment complex. The courtyard was dirt and crushed limestone, lined with cactus and some other desert brush I didn't recognize. Nothing here was real green, only pale green, as if coated in desert sand. I puffed my cigarette and mentally examined my thought about rejoining my band. Did I really loathe the idea? We were on the verge of stardom. Buckets of money and loads of fame lay ahead. So why did I feel like I wanted to walk away? Because you don't want to end up dead, came a helpful thought. I shivered despite the insane heat and took a long drag on my smoke. An apartment door facing the courtyard opened, and an older lady in a peach-colored house dress, slippers, and curlers in her short hair started out. She stopped when she saw me. I waved. Had enough for ya? The woman snorted and flapped both hands at me, then retreated behind her door with a slam. I glanced down at my boobs that were pushing out of the bustier and had to laugh. I was still encased in the latex and vinyl of my show outfit and sweating like mad. The old lady probably thought I was a prostitute. Sweat trickled down my back, and I could feel it along my sides where the corset-like top squeezed me. Going outside in the heat had been a bad idea. I crushed out my cigarette under my boot and headed back to Jonah's apartment, praying I hadn't locked myself out. Not only had I not locked myself out, I'd left the door slightly ajar. Nice, I thought. He lets you crash, and you leave his door open. The apartment complex didn't exactly scream wealth and riches lie within, but Jonah had his beautiful blown glass. They looked valuable to me. Back inside the merciful air conditioning, I sat back on the couch and pulled off my boots. My fishnets were torn in a dozen places. I took them off too, closed my eyes in relief, and stretched my legs. The cigarette had done nothing for my hangover. My tongue felt too big, and my teeth tasted like I hadn't brushed them in a week. Maybe Jonah had some mouthwash, or I could finger brush my teeth with his toothpaste. After taking a short pee in the one bathroom in the place, I went to wash my hands in the sink. I expected to find all kinds of scary guy-living-alone nastiness, shaving residue, or phlegm wads. During the short time I lived with Chet, he was always leaving disgusting messes in the sink or toilet. Jonah was not Chet. Like the rest of his place, the sink area was clean and uncluttered. I started to rinse my hands, but the reflection in the mirror stopped me cold. What was left of my eye makeup was smeared down my cheeks, as if I'd been crying. My lipstick had left a pale red stain under my lower lip, like some kind of rash. My hair was a tangled mess, and my pale skin appeared sallow under the fluorescent lights. Mortification that I had been sitting around talking to Jonah like this all morning punched me in the gut. God, Casey. I cleaned up the smeared eyeliner and lipstick with toilet paper, then opened the medicine cabinet in search of toothpaste. I froze at what I saw. The Crest and the Listerine were there, but they were crowded out by row after row of medication. Orange pill bottles with white caps as far as the eye could see. Holy drugstore, Batman! I turned some of the bottles my way to read the names. None were remotely familiar. Prednisone, Rapamune, Gengraf, Cyclosporine, Norvasc. What the fuck? I turned more labels to face me. Some had names I thought I recognized from TV ads, pain meds, a few for high blood pressure, two for lowering cholesterol, and one bottle of antibiotics. Why would a young guy need meds for cholesterol and blood pressure? The pink seam of the scar on Jonah's chest reared its head in my memory. Some kind of heart condition? That would explain the anti-smoking and the small pharmacy he had going on in this medicine cabinet. I closed the cabinet door quickly, toothpaste forgotten, feeling like I'd just walked in on someone naked or had read a highly private diary entry. I left the bathroom and went into the kitchen in search of more water. I needed to wash out the bad taste in my mouth from having snooped into Jonah's life. In the fridge, I found the bottled water Jonah mentioned, and not much else. Some wilting vegetables, packaged salads, and at least 3 trays of various casseroles covered in tinfoil. I gave a peek in the freezer, taking a moment to appreciate the cold air, and saw more packaged food. Lean cuisine and heart-healthy brands. As if Jonah were on a diet. This was not the fridge of a typical Las Vegas bachelor. And the medicine cabinet is... My stomach twisted with nerves instead of hunger. I'd never been good around sick people. I never knew the right thing to say, could never find the right balance between sympathy and pity. I clammed up during any kind of health discussion, and hospitals gave me the absolute heebie-jeebies. You're being stupid. You need to eat. You haven't eaten since... I couldn't remember the last time I'd eaten. Apparently, I was on a diet, too. A liquid diet. A bowl of cereal might be safe. I opened a few cabinets, looking for a plain old box of Cheerios. Instead, I found a shit ton of vitamins, supplements, and protein powders. I closed that cabinet in a hurry. Damn it. Jonah had said I could help myself, but now my appetite was gone completely. He wasn't just a total stranger. He was a total stranger who had a serious medical condition. It felt really intrusive to know all this stuff so soon. I was getting a crash course on his extremely personal shit, and he knew next to nothing about me. I wish I'd been brave enough to just let him take me back to the Summerlin house. I wandered back into the living area, not entirely sure what to do. The TV might have a news report about what happened at the Pony Club last night, so I left it off, and tried to let the quiet of Jonah's place settle me. I couldn't sit still. As a kid, my mother had been quick to diagnose me as ADHD, using it to excuse my exuberant behavior to my dad, who got irritated at the slightest noise or sign of rambunctiousness. I was always restless in my own skin. As I got older, I felt like 2 people trapped in the same body. An introvert who shied away at her dad's angry lectures, and an extrovert who practiced her electric guitar in the garage as loudly as possible to piss him off. A constant war with myself. Right now, the introvert in me whispered to enjoy the quiet. The extrovert wanted a drink. Bookshelves lined one wall of Jonah's living room. Industrial arts, art history, biographies of artists. Some I'd heard of, most I hadn't. I liked romances, horror, and a fun mystery now and then. Jonah was all nonfiction. Boring. I kept moving. On the opposite wall hung a bunch of framed pictures. Most showed Jonah smiling with what looked like his mom and dad. And a good-looking broody guy. A brother, maybe? The guy had the same basic facial structure as Jonah, the same dark hair, but he was shorter and bulkier. His features were more chiseled. His eyes were a lighter brown and harder. Dark tattoos snaked around his well-built arms. He looked exactly like the kind of guy I loved to take home for the night, losing myself in everything that was masculine and strong and powerful about him. A guy who would bail at the first rays of sunlight the next morning, no strings attached, just how I liked it. Jonah looked like the kind of guy who wanted to meet on the side of the road at night if your car had a flat. Or if you got blacked out drunk and wrecked a Vegas club. That too, I muttered absently, and kept perusing. The same hot brother and 2 other friends, an African-American guy and a pretty girl with long hair, showed up in a lot of pictures. At a club, at a party, surrounded by tall green trees on a camping trip, or on a desert plain with the sun rising or setting behind them. In almost every picture, Jonah wore a bright, open smile that made his whole face light up. Such a contrast to the stiff, serious expression he wore around me. I couldn't help but smile back at him. I noticed that one girl, a beautiful brunette with delicate features, was beside Jonah in a lot of pics. Jonah usually had his arm slung around her. that same happy smile on his face, while the woman looked pinched and posed, as if she had turned her best side to the camera. Above the photos were the two framed degrees I'd noticed this morning. One was a diploma from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and the other from Carnegie Mellon. Carnegie Mellon? That was a big-time university. Maybe even Ivy League. Jonah was talented and smart. He looked young, only a few years older than me. Shouldn't he still be at Carnegie Mellon? Or did whatever medical condition he had force him to quit? I touched a photo of a laughing, smiling Jonah. What happened to you? He's fine. He's making glass stuff at a hot shop, whatever that is. You, on the other hand, started a riot and then blacked out. The better question is, what happened to you? I'm fine, I told no one, even though I'd have given anything for a Bloody Mary just then. All at once, that damn bustier felt like it was 10 sizes too small, instead of only 2. I couldn't breathe and started to sweat all over again. The AC unit was turning quietly at the window overlooking the busy street. Rather than give the neighbors a thrill, I went back into the kitchen, pulling at the laces that held the bustier together on the sides. I peeled it off and let it hit the floor, leaving me in a black strapless bra as I threw open the freezer. I was too short. The icy air hit my face, but not where I needed it. I spied a step stool near the cabinets, dragged it in front of the freezer, and climbed up. I lifted my hair off my neck and held it bunched to my head, letting the air hit me under the arms and chest, cooling my burning skin and dampening my urge for a stiff drink. Hello? Jonah. I hadn't heard him come in over the whir of the freezer. I nearly toppled off the stool. Oh my God, seriously? I snatched my bustier off the ground and held it over my chest like a shield. Scare a gal to death, why don't you? He looked like he was biting back a smile.
Sorry, I was just trying to figure out what you were doing.
Fishing out one of your lean cuisines with my boobs, I retorted. What do you think I was doing? I'm cooling off.
I'm pretty sure that's what the air conditioner is for,
he said, jerking his thumb behind him. Yeah, but it's by the window, smart guy. I didn't want to flash the entire street. Jonah held up his hands.
Point taken.
A short silence descended where it was obvious neither of us knew what to do or say next. I huffed a sigh. Look, are you going to stand there staring at me all day, or maybe help me out? Your neighbor already thinks I'm a call girl. This is a stage outfit, not leisure wear. Now it was totally obvious he was trying not to smile.
Hold on a sec.
He went into the bedroom and came back with a plain black t-shirt.
This work?
I turned my back to him and pulled the shirt over my head. It was too big, and a v-neck, which was totally not my style. And it smelled like him. Once more, the feeling of being too personal, too soon with this guy came over me. Now I was standing barefoot in his kitchen, wearing his shirt. Thanks, I said, turning back to face him. Another short silence, during which Jonah stared at me. Not in a creepy way, more like he was trying to figure out what to make of me. I got that a lot. I shifted from foot to foot. How was your glass making?
Blowing.
Pardon?
It's glass blowing, Jonah said. I don't make the glass. I make things out of superheated glass by blowing air through a pipe.
He waved a hand.
Never mind. It's a long process. I don't want to bore you with the details. And we'd best get you back.
It doesn't sound boring, I said quickly. I can't even imagine how you make that stuff. So intricate. The paperweight with the sea creatures? I mean, how do you do it? God, I was babbling like an idiot, trying to stay above the surface, because the thought of going back to Summerlin was like a lead weight, dragging me down. Jonah frowned, clearly trying to decide if I really cared or if I was just stalling. Both.
I could explain,
he said.
But that would take all day, and I have a tight schedule to adhere to, and...
Me being here is a huge pain in your ass, I finished, trying not to sag. I get it. It's cool.
You're not a pain in the ass,
Jonah said. I cocked my head at him.
Okay, maybe a little,
he said with a small smile. I took that smile as a good sign. Hey, you know what? I'm fucking starving. How about we get some food somewhere? I still have about an hour before I need to get back and get ready for the show. What do you say? You up for something? My treat. Jonah's face stiffened and the muscles in his shoulders tensed up.
I have to drive tonight, at 6, and I'm on a really tight schedule.
You keep saying that. I chucked him in the shoulder, like we were old pals. Don't you ever break your routine?
No, I do not.
Oh, I bit my lip. I was nothing if not tenacious. One greasy post-hangover diner lunch won't take that long, will it? Half hour. 45 minutes, tops. Jonah's shrewd dark eyes met mine, and I could feel him studying me. He was observant, this guy, and I felt like my insecurities were written all over me. Or maybe it's because you look like the poster girl for the Walk of Shame.
I said you were welcome to eat anything here,
Jonah said finally. And it was kind of you to offer, but you don't have much in the way of actual food.
I have lots of dietary restrictions,
he said. Sure, I coughed. But why, exactly? Jonah looked to be waging an internal struggle, whether or not to tell me what I already suspected.
I have a heart condition,
he said slowly. Oh? As if I hadn't already snooped through his medicine cabinet. My eyes itched to glance at the scar that began in the hollow of his throat. I kept my gaze plastered to his face. I must have looked like a crazy person, staring so intently, because Jonah took a step backward.
Anyway, that's another long story, and... Yeah, I guess we could grab some food if you're really hungry.
Starved! I rushed back to the couch to put my thigh-high boots back on, which looked strange with my leather skirt and men's t-shirt, but I was out of the bustier, thank God. I'm ready.
Okay,
Jonah said hesitantly.
A quick lunch, and then I get you back to Summerlin.
Sounds great. He probably only agreed to food so we could change the subject, but no matter the reason, I was happy for a stay of execution. It wasn't much, but I took it.
Chapter 7 Jonah. I led Casey through the parking lot to my truck, a small pickup in blue, its flatbed filled with cardboard boxes. I held the passenger door open for her, which seemed to surprise her. This whole lunch outing surprised me. Not in the schedule by any stretch, but obviously Casey was in no hurry to rejoin her band. After whatever catastrophe she'd caused at the pony club, staying with me was an act of self-preservation. I climbed behind the wheel and my eyes strayed to Casey's thighs, smooth skin between her boots and the almost non-existent miniskirt. Part of a colorful tattoo was partially visible on her left thigh, and the urge to see the rest of it was ridiculously strong. Casey was easy on the eyes. Actually, she was more than that. She was beautiful. But so what? She was more Theo's type with her bleached hair, leather, and tattoos. But I couldn't keep my eyes off of her bare skin. How long had it been since I'd touched a woman? 1 year, 4 months, 13 days, and 18 hours. I scoffed at my inner mathematician, though the number probably wasn't far off. I hadn't been with a woman since my ex-girlfriend, Audrey, before I got sick. What's with the boxes in the back? Casey asked, jolting me from my thoughts. Are you moving? No. They're full of glass, I said, grateful for the distraction. Old bottles and jars that I melt down to make my pieces. I'm going to take them to the hot shop tomorrow. So the hot shop is where you blow the glass? Casey snickered. I arched a brow at her. I know. I'm 22, but I have the sense of humor of a 14-year-old boy. She turned in her seat toward me. And how do you do that?
Do what?
Raise only one eyebrow. I've always wanted to.
I shrugged. I don't know. I just can.
Do it again.
Why?
Because it's cool.
I arched my brow at her. Is it?
She laughed and sat back in her seat, satisfied. The broad smile remained on her lips as she watched Las Vegas passing outside her window. Even only half turned to me, she had a stunning smile. So, what are you working on? She asked after a moment. At the hot shop.
Well, I'm working on an exhibit for a local gallery. It opens in October. The exhibit, not the gallery.
Smooth, Fletcher. But it had been months since I'd spoken to a stranger about the exhibit. I'd whittled my circle down to exactly 3 friends, my family, and the curator of the gallery. Until Casey, I hadn't fully grasped just how small a circle that was.
Will you sell your glass at this exhibit? Casey asked. Like those beautiful paperweights?
Yes, I'll have small pieces like that for sale, but the main focus will be a large-scale installation. She started to ask another question as I pulled the truck into the parking lot of Mulligan's, a mom-and-pop diner. It was nearly 3 in the afternoon. The lunch rush was over, plenty of parking to be had. I pulled into a spot near the door.
This is right up the street from you, she said. We could have walked.
In this heat? I said, and shut off the engine.
Good point. The heat is god-awful. I don't know how you desert dwellers cope.
I held the diner door open for her, surprising her again. She beamed at me, and I almost lost my train of thought.
I was born and raised in the desert, I said. I'm used to it, but some people can't hack it. Wimps and pansies, every one.
Casey snorted and elbowed me lightly in the side as she breezed past me into the restaurant. She sighed with relief as we entered the air conditioning, then caught me, giving her a knowing look.
Oh, fine. I'm a wimp. She laughed. Get us a table, smartass, while I use the restroom.
I chuckled on my way to the hostess station. It was easy to be around this girl. And it seemed like she found it easy to be around me. Like we'd known each other for years instead of hours. A waitress greeted me.
How many, hon?
2, I said, and felt an immediate twinge in my chest. I had heard you could cut off a limb but still feel the pain of its absence. I didn't miss Audrey, my last girlfriend. She'd cut me off right after my transplant surgery. We'd planned a certain life together. But when the virus wrecked my heart and nearly killed me, it wrecked our plans and killed our relationship. Theo would never forgive her for leaving, but I got over her quickly, even after being together for 3 years. It hurt she left, and the timing sure shit couldn't have been better. But I forgave her for leaving to find someone else, someone healthy, with whom she could fall madly in love and build a real life with. I didn't miss her. Yet, in answering a waitress's innocuous question, I realized I missed the 2 of us. Being part of a couple, holding a door for someone, requesting a table for 2, joking, teasing, being someone's smartass. My tiny circle of loved ones didn't include a girlfriend, and wouldn't ever again. I thought I'd made peace with it. But some part of me, buried deep down, said otherwise. I sank into the booth and took up a menu to distract myself from thoughts I didn't want. Mulligan's had typical country diner fare. Breakfast served all day, and a variety of burgers and sandwiches for lunch. Unfortunately, more than half the items were strictly forbidden to me. Casey flounced into the seat across from me, looking scrubbed and vibrant. I tried not to think about the fact she was wearing my t-shirt, like girlfriends sometimes did with their boyfriend's clothes. The waitress set 2 waters on the table.
Coffee?
Yes, please, Casey said, desperately.
Decaf for me, I said. The waitress moved on, and Casey shot me a funny look.
Decaf?
I can't have caffeine.
What a tragedy.
She leaned over the table.
You know what they say, there's a time and a place for decaf.
Never, and in the trash. I laughed with her. I'll have to remember that one. Casey studied the menu.
I'm so hungry, I might have one of everything. What about you? What are you going to get?
Wait. She let the menu drop to the table.
What can you get?
Not sure yet. My options are kind of limited.
Because of your dietary restrictions?
Yeah.
Well, shit, Jonah. Why did you bring me here?
She flopped her hand at the menu.
This is all grease and fat.
I laughed and held up my hands at her sudden outburst. Whoa, it's cool. I'll find something. She bit her lip.
Yeah, but...
I brought you here for you, I said. This is perfect hangover food. I used to come here with friends when I was at UNLV. I tapped the corner of her menu.
Get whatever you want.
It's fine, I swear. She still looked dubious as the waitress came back with our coffees, putting an orange decaf doily under my mug.
You ready to order, hon?
Casey gnawed her lip.
Order,
I told her. Unless she'd rather we go back to my place and fire up some lean cuisines.
When you put it that way.
Casey turned to the waitress and said in a deep voice,
Yes, very well. I'll have a Bloody Mary and a steak sandwich. And a steak sandwich.
The waitress gave her a look and I frowned at the Bloody Mary. Casey flashed her eyes, looking between us.
It's from Fletch, the movie?
She jabbed a finger across the table.
You, Jonah Fletcher, can't tell me you haven't seen the greatest Chevy Chase movie of all time.
Sorry, I missed it, I said.
It's a classic,
Casey said.
I have a thing for 80s movies.
The waitress cleared her throat.
So do I, honey, but I don't have steak sandwiches or Bloody Marys.
Casey ordered a cheeseburger and fries, and I ordered a Cobb salad, hold the bacon, and a side of wheat toast, no butter. When the waitress moved on, Casey shook her head.
No bacon? The only good thing about a Cobb salad is you get to put bacon on it.
I shrugged. Not on the list.
That sucks. What else can't you eat?
No red meat, no chocolate, no salt on anything. Casey nearly choked on her coffee.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! No chocolate?
I miss salt more, I said. And butter. Nothing fatty. Nothing delicious. I laughed dryly. In summation, I'm not allowed to eat anything delicious. Casey shook her head.
I don't know how you do it.
Not like I have a choice. And there are worse things.
I'm trying to imagine something worse than not being able to eat chocolate.
She froze, then set her coffee mug down, her smile vanishing.
Oh my God, that's a terrible thing to say to someone with a heart condition. I'm sorry. I do that a lot. Just blurt out whatever pops into my head.
Hey, it's cool. I can't do cocaine anymore either. But that turned out to be a blessing in disguise for all the money I'm saving. Her embarrassment fell away with a smile.
Yeah, you look like the cocaine type to me.
Total cokehead.
Reformed.
Casey relaxed and sat back in her seat.
So, you went to UNLV? That's where you studied industrial arts?
Yes, my brother and I both studied art there.
And then Carnegie Mellon?
I sipped my coffee. You sure ask a lot of questions.
You have a lot of photos and diplomas on your wall. Before I decided to cool off my boobs in your freezer, I had some time to kill.
I set my cup down before I spilled it.
That's not something you hear every day. It is in my world,
Casey said with a rueful smile, as if it was an old joke she'd gotten tired of hearing, but she waved it off.
Carnegie Mellon is where?
She asked. Pennsylvania. Talk about a weather shock. The first winter I was there, I wanted to hibernate.
Wimp,
she said over the rim of her coffee.
But from one pansy to another, East Coast has too much weather for me, too.
I was born and raised in San Diego, where if it drizzles, people lose their shit.
The waitress arrived with our food. I never let anyone alter their diet around me, but the scent wafting from Casey's plate curled around my nose, rich and meaty and grilled. I glanced down at my salad that smelled like nothing and took a bite, mostly for Casey's sake.
So you have a gallery opening in October? Casey asked, dabbing her mouth with a napkin. It's too bad I won't be around to see it. I'll be on tour for the next bazillion years.
Bazillion years? That's a long tour. I hope you like to travel. She shrugged.
It's not all it's cracked up to be.
No?
It sounds ungrateful. Most musicians would give their right tit to be signed by a label and go on a multi-city tour, right?
As I have no tit to give, right or left, I couldn't say for sure, I said with a grin. But from my professional observation, as your chauffeur, it doesn't look like you're having the time of your life. Her eyes flicked up to the ceiling.
What gave that away?
The trashed concert venue, or blacking out and puking in your limo?
Ty.
She smiled.
I miss the honest music, without all the theatrics, you know? I used to love just sitting with my guitar and picking out a song, finding a riff or a melody, falling into the zone of writing lyrics.
Did you go to school in San Diego for music?
No, I didn't go to college at all, she said. But I've been playing since I was a kid. My grandmother gave me a guitar when I was 10. I liked to play, but mostly I liked writing songs. The guitar was a way to put the tune behind my words. It could have been anything. A piano, drums. I just wanted to write and sing.
You sing too?
Only backup nowadays,
she said, not quite meeting my eyes.
And I don't write my own stuff anymore. Just songs for the band.
Why? She traced the line of one dark eyebrow, absently with her finger. Her hair was blonde, but her eyebrows were darker. And perfect.
We're a team now. I write for us, Casey was saying. But in a way, it's better for me. I need the band.
She glanced up at me through lowered lashes.
I don't do so well on my own.
I nodded, struggling for something constructive to say. To stay focused on her words and not the little details on her face.
I feel like everything's moving so fast, Casey continued. And I don't have time to sit and sort things out. Like, what do I want to do? Is this what I want to do? Be a rock star? Half of me says, hell yeah. The other half of me is scared.
Scared of what?
The lifestyle? The partying? I feel like I do that so I don't have to make any real decisions. I just follow the band, play really loud music, and drink a lot because...
I asked gently. She shrugged casually, even if her words weren't.
Because I have nowhere else to go.
An image of the bodyguard carrying her out of the club last night flashed through my mind, juxtaposed with a promo shot of her giving the world the finger. Vulnerable and tough at the same time.
She seems lost.
Casey sat back and waved a hand, as if her words were cigarette smoke to dispel.
Anyway, that's my angsty hangover story.
I knew that wasn't all of it. I had the impression she had a ton more stories and a ton more songs in her. Silence fell between us as I sipped my decaf that was growing cold. A half dozen times I started a sentence, wanting to share something with her. Something deeply personal. As if there were some cosmic scoreboard that needed to be evened up. But my most personal thing was too much. Too dark. Casey Dawson was luminous, and I couldn't stand the idea of watching my deepest truth settle over her like a shroud, dimming her light with its awful finality. I toyed with my medic alert bracelet under the table. I could at least tell her why I had to eat a fucking salad instead of a burger. I started to, then the waitress appeared with her coffee carafe. She refilled Casey's mug, then started to fill mine. Casey San shot out and covered my mug.
Wait, is that regular? He can only have decaf. The waitress jerked the pot back with a small cry.
Damn, honey, I nearly scalded you.
I'm sorry, Casey said. It's important. She glanced at me.
It's not worth you getting burned, I said. But the gesture touched me.
I'll get the other pot,
the waitress said, and retreated in a huff.
Casey's hand was back in her lap, and her cheeks were pink.
Sorry. I got a little overexcited.
You go all the way up to 11, I said, figuring an 80s movie quote would smooth things over.
Her head shot up, a smile breaking across her face like the dawn.
This is Spinal Tap, she said. A classic.
I held onto her eyes, felt the moment between us, warm and thick.
Thanks for guarding my coffee, I said.
It's important.
Her eyes softened.
Will you tell me why?
I had a heart transplant, I said.
Oh,
she said, sitting back in her booth seat. Her eyes stared far off a moment, then she gave her head a brusque shake.
A heart transplant? But you're so young. 25?
26. The virus that wrecked my heart didn't give a shit how old I was. I smiled ruefully. Viruses are assholes like that. Casey didn't smile. She pointed toward my wrist and the medic alert bracelet.
Can I see?
I slid my arm toward her on the table. She flipped the rectangular tag over, from the red enameled cross to the words inscribed on the other side.
Heart transplant patient. See wallet card.
Casey looked up at me.
What's on the wallet card?
My emergency contact info, my blood type, yada yada. Her gaze pressed me.
Yada yada?
What to do in case I get in trouble? She nodded. Next, she'd asked about what kind of trouble I could get into, and I'd make up something about medication side effects, which was a hell of a lot easier to hear than total heart failure. Instead, she asked,
was it recent?
Almost a year and a half ago. Her eyes widened.
That's really recent.
She let go of the tag, and the heel of her hand settled on mine. A frozen, soundless moment. Then her hand slid backward, palm to palm. Her fingers curled around mine and held still. I stared as my thumb came down on top of her knuckles and slowly moved back and forth. The waitress came back with the orange-lipped decaf pot. The look on her face was sour. Until she saw our hands. She smiled as she topped up my cup.
I'm sorry to hear all this,
Casey said when the waitress had moved on. She gave my fingers a final squeeze and let go. I put my empty, bewildered hand in my lap.
So am I.
Casey toyed with her spoon.
Is it hard to talk about?
Yeah, I admitted. Only the people closest to me know.
And I'm the newcomer, busting into your personal space and asking all kinds of questions.
Yes, I said. You are goddamn nosy. She squawked and chucked a french fry at me. I laughed and plucked it off my lap.
Wait, shit, you can't have that.
Casey reached across the table to snatch it back.
I did not just almost scald myself over your damn coffee so you could eat a fry instead.
Your sacrifice is duly noted. I crammed the whole thing in my mouth and nearly groaned in ecstasy. I'd forgotten how good a fried potato could be. Salty, greasy perfection. Oh, holy God, that tastes good. Casey moved her plate out of my reach.
That's all you get, buddy. I'm not going to be responsible for breaking your diet. I've already broken the routine you keep talking about, right? I'm a bad influence on you.
My laughter died and my smile froze. She was right. In the space of one lunch, Casey had not only broken my diet, but she'd put a dent in my carefully crafted routine. It wasn't just taking up my time that could have been spent in the hot shop. It was this. Lunch. Easy laughter and sharing. Trusting one another with secrets. Fingers curled softly together. This was a forbidden item on the menu. This was bad for my heart. I wiped my mouth with a napkin and set it on the table.
Yeah. Speaking of my schedule, I said, I only have a few hours before I start my shift at A1. And you have a show tonight. We should get you back to Summerlin.
Casey's smile faded away, and her chin tilted at my obvious change in demeanor.
Oh, sure.
Her luminous light dimmed.
Ready when you are.
Chapter 8 Jonah. I drove us back to my apartment so Casey could retrieve her bustier and the remnants of her fishnet stockings. But when I pulled into the parking lot, she didn't get out of the truck, only sat there, unmoving.
Throw this stupid bustier away, she said finally.
You sure?
Let's just keep going, she said,
but it sounded more like, let's get it over with. I drove Casey back to the Summerlin house in silence. I stopped the truck in the great circular driveway. Casey climbed out of the truck and stood facing the house.
I fucking hate Las Vegas,
she muttered so low I almost didn't hear her. She turned to me, leaned into the passenger window.
Thanks for taking care of me last night.
No problem, I said.
Say something else. Say something better.
But the words stuck in my throat.
And thanks for paying for lunch. It was supposed to be my treat, but I had no money on me, naturally.
She shook her head.
If you wait a sec, I'll run up and get some cash.
Forget it, I said. I ate a french fry for the first time in a year. It was worth $20. She raised her eyes to mine.
Thanks for that, too.
What, eating a fry?
For cheering me up. Every time I feel a little down, you make a joke to lift me up.
I nodded like a mute idiot, not sure what would fall out of my mouth, a joke or the truth. Making her laugh was like hitting a mini jackpot. She shuffled her feet.
Okay, well, I should get back.
Break a leg tonight, I finally managed.
I'll be lucky if that's all I break, she said with a weak laugh.
She started to close the door, then stopped.
Thanks for being a good guy, Jonah. There's a shortage in the world.
She shut the door and walked away, her pale hair glinting like spun glass in the sun. I watched her walk to the entrance to make sure she got in okay, I told myself, waiting until she entered the dark confines of the house. It swallowed her up, and the door shut behind her. Without Casey, my apartment felt airless and sealed, and silent.
Had it always been this quiet?
I went to the couch to fold up the Afghan. Remnants of Casey's perfume wafted up, and I nearly put the damn thing to my nose to inhale.
You do not have time for this.
I had to rebuild my fortifications, reforge the armor I needed to make it to October. I had to erase last night and this afternoon, bury it along with the memory of Casey's eyes when she smiled, or how her bare thigh in her short skirt tried to wake up a physical desire I had been denying still existed. With a silent apology to my departed grandmother, I wadded up the blanket and tossed it in the closet. Then my desire and I took a very cold shower. After, I stood in my silent kitchen, drinking the dregs of a disgusting protein shake that was no match for the french fry Casey had pelted me with.
For fuck's sake, get over it.
Dwelling on this woman, or any woman, was a waste of time. I wasn't a one-night stand kind of guy. I'd never been wired that way. And starting a relationship now was out of the question. Not with Casey Dawson. Not with anyone.
No more taking beautiful women home with you, or even to lunch. Not anymore.
I checked my phone. It was 5 o'clock on Saturday night, and I was dressed for work. I had 2 texts from Theo and a voice message from my father, as per usual. Tomorrow I would spend all day at the hot shop, then have dinner with my family. Everything as it should be. My routine had been shaken a little, but remained intact. On my way out the door, I scooped up Casey's bustier in torn fishnets, then chucked them in the dumpster in the parking lot. We now return to our regularly scheduled program. My boss, Harry Kelton, had been out when I returned the car from last night, but he was in tonight. I suspected he wanted to reiterate, in person, that taking drunk girls home was not in my contract. "Fletcher," he said by way of greeting, and pulled my paperwork for the night from the mess on his desk. He tossed me a set of car keys. I caught them one-handed as I studied the night's assignment under the flickering fluorescence, and gaped at what I read. "Rapid confession? Again? Casey." Harry laced his hands behind his head, round circles of sweat darkening his button-down under his arms. "Their manager specifically asked for you." "After last night?" "I guess he forgave you," Harry said. "Lucky thing, too. It's a good charter." I shook my head in frustration. It's not lucky if he's pissed off and trying to screw me out of another tip. "You ditched them last night," Harry said, leaning forward and jabbing a fat finger on the mess on his desk. "I'm lucky he hired and paid for another charter. It would have been well within his rights to cancel last night's payment, never mind your tip." He leaned back in his chair, making it creak. "Win-win for both of us, Fletcher. I keep his business, and you get a second chance." "Boss." He turned that jabbing finger in my direction. "You're my best driver, Jonah. But I'm none too happy about last night. Finish the job if you want to keep yours." I left Harry's office in a daze, his words echoing in my head. A second chance. "God damn it," I muttered. I almost turned around to storm back into the office and tell Harry to forget it. Someone else could take the charter. Except Harry was on the verge of firing me, and I couldn't afford to lose my job. I strode through the garage, past rows of black and white limousines, town cars, and sedans, bolstering myself. I can be professional. I'll do my job and get through this night. "Hey, Fletcher." I turned to see Kyle Porter, another driver, headed to his car. "I heard you got the rapid confession gig. Twice, you lucky bastard. The guitar chick is fucking hot." I climbed behind the wheel of my black stretch and slammed the door. "Tell me about it." By 6 o'clock, I was back at the Summerlin residence, parked in the circular driveway, waiting for the band to emerge. The sun had only begun to set, streaking the sky orange and purple on the western horizon. Normally, I'd have studied the play of light, thinking how I could recapture those colors in swirls of melted glass, but I was too distracted. What was I going to say to her? Make a joke? Make her smile and laugh? Or just play it cool? Keep to the routine. "It's you." I jerked out of my thoughts to see the band and their manager, bags in hand, nearly at the car. And Casey. She bounded up to me in leggings, ankle boots, and an oversized black t-shirt with Ziggy Stardust on the front. She'd piled her hair on top of her head in a messy knot, and her face was scrubbed free of makeup, lit up with a combination of joy and relief that sent my borrowed heart into a fit of rapid beats. She planted her hands on her hips, giving me a playful, arch look. "Are you stalking me?" Before I could reply, Jimmy Ray sidled up to Casey and slung his arm around her. "So this is the heroic limo driver who took care of my girl last night. I hired him again, kitten, as a personal thank you." He winked at me. "She's a little handful, isn't she?" I'd seen pricks like this guy a million times during my 6 months as a limo driver in Vegas. I always treated them with detached courtesy. But Jimmy's hand hovered over Casey's right breast, and an urge to punch his smug face came over me like a tidal wave. "Go on, get," Jimmy said to Casey. He unslung his arm and smacked her lightly on the ass to hustle her into the limo. An embarrassed smile flickered over Casey's lips, and she didn't look at me as she climbed in. Jimmy Ray extended his hand to me, and I took it out of professional habit. "All is forgiven, buddy," he pulled me close. "I hope you had a good time with my girl last night, but we're not gonna make a habit out of it, yeah? Don't wear out the goods." His hand oozed out of mine, leaving a $100 bill in my palm. I crumpled the money into my fist as he climbed in the back, Only the threat of losing my job kept me from chucking it at his feet. I shut the limo door hard, a hair away from slamming it, and loaded the band's bags into the trunk. Once behind the wheel, my eyes itched to find Casey in the rearview mirror, but the partition went up, muffling the sounds of loud talk and laughter. I pulled out of Summerlin and drove to the strip, already glittering in the falling twilight. Just east of the Flamingo, near the convention center, I veered off the boulevard and maneuvered my stretch to the rear parking lot of the Pony Club, just as I had the night before. I opened doors and unloaded the bags one by one, just like the night before. But now, I was acutely conscious of Casey behind me, waiting her turn. She came last, and I turned to hand off her bag. Her eyes were cerulean blue, and made electric by the dingy amber light of the street lamp that flickered on above us. "So Jimmy requested you personally," she said quietly, as the others filed in the back door. "He did."
"I hope he wasn't a dick to you. He can be...
dickish?"
"Yeah, but he's a good manager."
I shut the trunk. That's all that matters. One of the band members, a girl with blue and black hair, poked her head out of the back door.
"Case?" "Coming,"
Casey called over her shoulder.
"That's Lola, my best friend. She got me into this band. If it weren't for her, I'd probably be on the streets. I can't let her down, you know."
She sounded like she was trying to work herself up to do something frightening. My instinct was to comfort her or protect her. But from what? How? "Can I help?" I blurted.
"Will you be here after the show?"
she asked, her face open and hopeful, a sad smile at its center. "Yeah, Casey, I'll be here," I said gently. "I'll drive you home."
"I'm so glad," she said.
She shuffled her feet, not quite meeting my eyes.
"There's talk of a party after, at Summerlin. A ton of people are coming. The guys from our opening act. You should come. I mean, if you want. If you're allowed."
I wasn't. We weren't permitted to socialize with our fares, but the desire to protect her was fierce, and neither company policy nor my stringent rules about the routine could change that. Her friend Lola emerged from the back door again.
"Casey, you can't make us late again, sweetie. I'm serious." "I gotta go."
Casey reached out and squeezed my hand.
"I'll see you after."
She hurried to join her band, and I tried to imagine this girl playing electric guitar on stage in front of a screaming audience. She seemed ready to crack in two, and aside from her friend with the two-tone hair, it seemed like she had not one fucking person in the world to help hold her together. I wiped my hand on my uniform pants pocket, as if I could wipe away her touch and the feelings that came with it, but I could still feel her soft skin against mine. I slid behind the wheel to wait out the show. The line of limos behind mine grew, and I'd bet Trevor was among them, still not having learned to take off his damn jacket while waiting in the heat. Unlike last night's monotony, I spent this night with my nerves jangling, hoping Casey was okay, and being pissed at myself for caring. Every muffled swell of the crowd made me flinch, and I half expected Hugo to bust out of the back door with her in his arms again. After 2 hours, my nervousness settled into a dull pang in the pit of my stomach. A homeless man shuffled up to me, asking me for some spare change. I handed him the crumpled-up $100 bill Jimmy Ray had given me. The homeless man's eyes were wreathed in a bone-deep weariness. They widened as he offered me a gap-toothed smile of profound relief before slinking back into the night. Best $100 I ever spent. It was close to 11 when the show ended. Through the alley that led to the street, I saw a stream of concertgoers file out. I put my jacket back on and waited at the limo door for the band to emerge. An hour later, I was still waiting, sweating in my jacket like a Trevor. Finally, the door burst open. Out staggered Rapid Confession and the guys from their opening act. All of them drunk and loud and laughing with a post-show high. I searched for Casey. She was in her concert outfit now, skin-tight black leather pants, and a low-cut black halter top that revealed a valley of smooth skin between the soft curve of her breasts. Tattoos on her arms were stark against her pale skin. Her hair was still piled messily on her head, tendrils falling loose to frame her face. Casey looked worn out from the show, sweaty and disheveled and drunk. The drummer from the opener had an arm slung around her neck. They both staggered and weaved. As Casey climbed, none too gracefully, into the limo, her eyes met mine, glazed with liquor. She flashed me a watery smile before disappearing inside. Jimmy and the other band's manager crammed in last, without a glance my way. I shut the door behind them, bottling up the cacophony of laughter and loud talk. On the drive to Summerlin, my eyes kept straying to the rearview mirror, and twice I barely avoided rear-ending the car in front of me. But as long as the partition was down, I kept trying to catch a glimpse of Casey, to make sure she was all right. Why do you care? She's a rock star. This is what they do. But I did care. She'd drunk herself into oblivion last night and gotten almost as wasted again tonight. She told me at lunch today she was scared. But of what? The party scene? Or something more? And why, in the space of 24 hours, had her fears become so important to me? I screeched into the circular drive of the Pink Palace in Summerlin. This time, lights were blazing in every window. When I opened the passenger door, a great tangle of staggering bodies and laughter spilled out. I hazarded a guess the limo minibar was raided down to the ice cubes. The drummer from the opening act was all over Casey, and as the group moved toward the house, I watched her try to shove him away. "Get off," she said and staggered back. The guy laughed and said something I couldn't hear. He went at her again, an arm snaking around her waist to yank her to him. "No," she said, her voice muffled against the guy's chest as he pinned her close. His head bent, mouth on her neck and his other hand sliding down to her breast. "Ryan, stop." "Hey." Casey's friend Lola pulled away from her guy and started wobbling toward Casey to help. I was faster. I grabbed the drummer by his shoulder and shoved him off Casey so hard he tripped on his heels and landed on his ass. "She said stop, asshole," I said. The drummer scrambled to his feet, his expression morphing from confusion to shock, to anger. I stared him down, and when Casey fell into me, her face buried against my jacket, my arm went around her. "Who the fuck are you?" The drummer's lip curled in a sneer. "The driver?"